Hey everybody, welcome back to Arcade Cozy, the coziest game room on the internet. My name is Chris.
My name is Corey.
And we are back again. Corey, It is news, breaking news. It's still hot.
Breaking
outside.
Breaking news.
Breaking. Oh, well, breaking. Yes. Yeah, it
sucks.
Yeah. What did you think I was saying? That Nintendo dropped a new console?
Well, I thought it was going to be the news of Nintendo is more than likely dropping a new console mid next year. Yeah.
Fun fact, everybody. Let's dive right in. It started coming out. I guess so. We're recording this on the 31st. It started, I guess. Everybody was talking about Nintendo is rumored to have a Switch successor coming out as soon as second half of 2024. Which, you know, I guess depending on who you are, that's either really soon or it's about time. I don't know. Who knows? I have no opinion either way, but it's, I think I've seen different people kind of having different opinions where it's like, whoa, that's mind blowing. I wouldn't have even guessed. But there's not a whole lot of actual meat out there. It seems like the biggest thing is that it will likely legitimately be a Switch in that it will still have the take it with you and go pop it in functionality that a Switch does, which is a huge positive. I think it's near impossible to go back from that. After you've, made that such a mainstream part of your thing, I guess now it becomes, is it backwards compatible? Can I play, Super Mario Odyssey, whatever on it? Or is it going to be am I going to have to buy a Switch 2 version? Which, to be fair, the Wii U, for all of the issues that happened with the Wii U and stuff, the Wii U was backwards compatible with the Wii. You could play Wii games. Even the Wii, you could play GameCube games on a Wii. It's not unheard of. You are less likely to see Sony make a backwards compatible console than you are Nintendo at the end of the day, because they've done their stuff. But I think that's kind of the big question. It seems like they're making choices. I saw something say that the rumor was they were going with LED screens instead of OLED screens, which would be likely to keep the cost down. There's no reports on it's going to be this strong or this. More than likely, if you know Nintendo, it's not going to break new ground. It's not going to be it's not going to be the best thing you've ever seen. But Nintendo is very creative in the way that they go about stuff. Tears of the Kingdom, is playing on 6-year-old hardware and still looks beautiful. They're
I was playing it a ton today.
Yeah, there's nothing that it virtually means nothing. So it's it's a kind of an exciting thing seeing just what comes next, what that looks like. It's been so long since, because I remember whenever the Switch came out, just the hype cycle of the Switch, seeing those. I remember Corey. I remember I was sitting in a Barnes and Noble. I had taken my car to go get serviced and they gave me a rental and I was doing some work in a Barnes and Noble coffee shop and the Switch reveal trailer dropped where they were playing on the couch and I'm playing on a roof and I'm doing all this stuff. And it was before you had ever seen Super Mario Odyssey hadn't been announced, but they were showing little glimpses of this 3D Mario game and stuff. And it was oh my God. I remember I was in tears, Corey. I was sobbing in a Barnes & Noble just watching this thing. And I can only hope that the Switch 2 will bring the same amount of energy where I'm just sitting there and I'm this is my favorite day of my life. And
what a beautiful if only. Painting.
Yes.
No, I'm very excited for it. I'm very interested to see what they do. I feel like they have to do a backwards compatibility, considering the scope that the library of the Nintendo Switch is. It is a gargantuan library of first-party title games. Even more so than I think PlayStation 4 has ever had or Xbox One ever had. I mean, Mario Odyssey, we have Breath of the Wild, Tears of the Kingdom, Fire Emblem Engage, Fire Emblem Three Houses. There's going to be Mario Wonder that's coming later this year, Pikmin 4, Metroid Dread, Xenoblade Chronicles 3. I mean, I can go on and on and on, I think, with all of the titles that are exclusively to Switch. And so I can't see them abandoning such heavy hitters that can't be played on a new one, unless they go further into a Game Pass style idea, which yep. they have shown no indication of going in that route based on the Nintendo Switch Online system. Yep. So my belief is that it'll be backwards compatible. Whether it's what the Switch 2, like whether it's just a upgrade on the Switch, I don't know. Because I feel like every time Nintendo releases a new console, it's something very different. Like yep. you said, they like to do things differently. They like to push things, not necessarily in a hardware, like beefed up way. Like you're not going to be playing a 4K game on whatever this console is. I think they always are looking to innovate how you play, I feel like, between, you know, the home consoles of SNES, N64, GameCube, to the Wii's, to their handheld consoles of Game Boy, Game Boy Color, Nintendo, the DS, 3DS, all of that. Now they've combined it to the two of those into the Switch. Now it's just one thing. I'm curious to see what's the next evolution of this. Is it a like multi-screen thing? Is it going to be a like a combo? Like you almost have a Game Boy Advance that is like a Switch as like a partner to whatever this console is. I think they're going to really take what they've done with the Switch and what they've done in the past with their other consoles and build and make something that's completely unique and different from what the Switch is. I think it'll still have the core idea of the Joy-Cons and the screen, and you can take it with you and it can be on a TV, but I think we're going to see so much more added onto it. Like I said, whether that's an additional screen where you can have it on like a TV, or and you can play like handheld as well, almost like a DS double screen thing.
Yeah.
Something along those lines. I just can't see them being safe with this, and being safe would just be a beefed Switch.
Yeah. It's and the trouble with that is that
that's like, all hyperbole and
right.
throwing things out.
Right. None well, and it's not that in me saying that, I don't mean that you're wrong. I mean more from the point of view. The trouble that Nintendo's gotten in the past is just like $10 word obfuscating yeah. the point. Like,
yes,
you know, really splintering their fan base and making it, and when they don't splinter their fan base, making it confusing to know mm-hmm. whether or not you're a part. Because that's the thing, is like, that was the Wii U's biggest downfall, honestly. Like, the Wii yeah. U had a killer library of some really yeah. cool games. The biggest, and also the gamepad was... Yeah,
what I've just described as the Wii U, I guess, but something right. like those ideas.
Yeah. Right. I mean, the Wii U was just so confusing for so many people because it functioned like a Wii, but it had other stuff. And for the people, like the Wii was such a, it wasn't a console that only attracted like hardcore gamers who were in the know. It attracted people who had never played games before. And so people who were looking at like, oh, the Wii U, this is like, I love my Wii. Maybe I should get this. Like, it became really confusing because not everybody knew what to look for. Not everybody yep. knew that there were, you know, that there was going to be this new thing and it was going to have all this stuff. And that would be the thing that I worry about because I mean, you even look back, I don't remember this split, but like Game Boy versus Game Boy Color. I mean, how many people were in that position where it's like, well, I got a Game Boy. I would love a cartridge that can play color games. And then they pop it in and it just like it doesn't. And because like that's what because that's not how it works. And you have to buy a Game Boy Color to play that, but then you can also play regular Game Boy games. And then like then you get the Game Boy Advance. And then I mean, God, who knows?
Game Boy Advance SP.
The SP, the micro. Like, I mean, you and I think that is the thing that I'm a little bit worried about is because like Nintendo's, you know, they had the 3DS and then they had the 3DS XL and then they had the new Nintendo 3DS and then they had the new Nintendo 3DS, 2DS, you know, all this kind of stuff. And like, I would worry that they would pitch it, that they would go too far and they would try to do too many extra things and make the Switch a failure. And potentially that's why they haven't launched something yet, is maybe they've taken that into account. Maybe they've looked at it and been like, we don't want to make this mistake again. So we need to do this right. And that's my biggest hope is that they would, if they don't do, I hope they don't do something radical. I want them to iterate on the Switch. I want them to make that better because they have effectively like laid the foundation that everybody's emulating at this point. So keep it rolling, keep doing cool stuff, like, you know, build off of that, but really like lean into it and don't splinter your fan base. Like everything be Switch, like this plays on like your Switch and your Switch 2. It's like, this is a effectively, I guess maybe all I'm saying is like, maybe just make a Switch Pro. Like maybe that be the answer. I don't know if that's the right answer. I don't even know if that's what my heart wants. But I think because I was looking at numbers, Nintendo Switch is the third best selling console of all time. And it would be such a negative for them to like splinter their fan base and make it this huge, like confusing thing. And I hope that whatever it looks like, I hope that they do something cool and innovative, but they don't make it confusing, if that makes sense. Like, I hope they can find a way to like do their Nintendo stuff and do something that really is worth like a brand new console. But they're also like, I don't know. But they're also like clear. I don't know. Maybe like the DS is the best analogous. Cause I mean, you think about like the DS was a brand new thing that had all this functionality and it just had a Game Boy Advance slot just in it. Like you could still play. It was like, hey, you want to play your Game Boy games? Just pop it in. You could still do it. But look at all this cool new stuff. Like maybe that's the answer. Go for it. Do your thing. Just include a little switch slot on there. Like keep that Switch functionality, baby, and have that little slot, but do your other cool stuff and just be like, look, if you just want to play Breath of the Wild, just pop it in. It's right here.
Yeah. It's a little bit better,
but we're going to do all this weird stuff over here and have fun with it. Maybe I am working my way to an answer as I'm talking.
Yeah.
But maybe that's what I want. Maybe I just want like a revival of that kind of energy.
Yeah. I mean, I want to see them do something fun. That's my thing. I don't want to see them keep it safe. I think we will see maybe something along those lines where, oh yeah, you can play Switch games here, but we also have Switch 2 games over here, which when you think about the DS, because it came out so short after the Game Boy Advance, it killed the Game Boy Advance. And I think, because it's been 6 years of this console, of the Switch, they don't have to worry about doing something like that. Oh yeah, you can just play both. Here's that slot. I think it'd be very, I guess in a dream world, it would be very cool if they would be like, so yeah, we closed down the 3DS shop. That's because we're going to add it onto this console revamped. And now we have slots for our new console, Switch, 3DS, DS, all here. If not Game Boy and Game Boy Advance, just all here, you can buy attachments, all this, it runs everything. I think that'd be the perfect thing. But Nintendo would never do that because they hate us, but they also love us because they don't give us what we want. They just give us what we need.
Yeah. Can you imagine that monstrosity though? Like if it was just a big square where every inch of the perimeter is just a port for some.
I don't think
console.
It'd be that big. I think you could easily just have it just be like what it is there. It doesn't have to be
you
a port.
Plug
it
in
just
your,
be,
you want to plug in your new Super Nintendo? Here, right here. Pop it in
this bad oh, good boy. God. Well, I guess I didn't think about that going that far back, but maybe it'd be interesting if they could develop some sort of attachment where yeah. it's like, oh, I can put this here. Now I can slot in a Game Boy game and I can play my Game Boy game, like any of my old Game Boy yeah. games here on the Switch. I feel like one, that'd be difficult, but also I feel like it wouldn't be that difficult either. But hey,
that would be the killer. That would be the killer thing is if it was just like, hey, you know what? It's a Switch and you know, it runs, it's got better hardware. It's got better innards, but you know what? Also it has this thing on it.
This port
just attached to it. It will run any Nintendo game you own and people will, I will. I mean, my wife's in hearing distance. So I'm saying this, like, I'll say this quietly. I would spend like $1,000.
I would throw big ripper stacks. Like the meme of Futurama of take my money, Nintendo. You take my money here. Here's my wire number. You know, just put in the number. Whatever you think is fitting.
Yeah. I don't know. We'll have to wait to see. I'm sure. I mean,
hey, we're geniuses. Nintendo hire us.
They're gonna if it happens. Weird,
I would like something. 1% of all
some compensation for that. I'm sure we'll if it is true. I'm sure we'll hear something. End of this year, beginning of next. So keep your eyes peeled, everybody.
They'll announce it during holiday season to get pre-orders and pre-sales in.
Maybe you also got to think though. I mean, would they want?
It's not
to-
dropping next holiday season. It's going to drop next year.
Yeah, but, well, I mean, it says second half of next year, but also, too, would you want to cannibalize potential Switch holiday sales by saying, like, you have another console?
Are they going to, so they've announced Super Mario Wonder comes out in October. Are they going to announce any other games coming out next year with this on the horizon? I can't see them doing any huge, like, releases.
Yeah, I don't know. I have been suspicious that Metroid Prime 4 is going to be a launch game for that, and a 3D Mario are going to be like launch yeah, window games 100%. For whatever comes next.
I agree.
Yeah. I don't know. Excited though. Yeah. Outside of that, Corey, not a ton of news. There was this was interesting, maybe only to me. I don't know. It could be interesting to you. Maybe you saw it. Armored Core got some gameplay footage.
Yeah, I watched it.
Yeah, Lords of the Fallen also got some gameplay
footage.
Also
watched it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, both of them. So Armored Core is the revival mech game, revival of a mech series by FromSoft, people who make Dark Souls, Elden Ring. You might have heard mm-hmm. of them. It's coming out in about a month. And people are pretty hot on it. I don't really know what to think just because like I have no perspective. I really, not even with Armored Core, I have zero perspective for like big, fast mech games. Like
yeah, same.
Really do not know what to expect or really what I'm looking at and whether or not it's supposed to be like good. But the people who are playing it are saying, oh, it feels good. So that's kind of, and also like FromSoft at this point, they've tuned it in.
Yeah, they have so much good equity. I trust them.
Yeah, so I'm excited to see that. Also, Lords of the Fallen, like for all of its confusingness, because Lords of the Fallen is the sequel to Lords of the Fallen. Yeah. you might know it.
You guessed it.
This was Lords of the Fallen, which then became, what was it? The Lords of the Fallen. And then it went through this whole thing before they just were like, you know what? We're going to call it Lords of the Fallen again. Yeah. I don't know if it's an actual sequel, whatever, but it was like one of the first Souls-likes that came out, like on the PS4 generation, maybe like 2014-ish. This is another one of those. I saw the gameplay footage. Looked pretty cool.
Yep.
Looked not too bad. Who knows? I mean, I can't imagine it's gonna, like, it's gonna blow people away, but, like, I mean, it's like, if you're a Soulsborne person, I consider myself that.
Yep.
We're eating good this year because, I mean, mm-hmm. you got Wolong Fallen Dynasty. Still haven't played it, but it's out. Remnant 2. A lot of people hate it, but it's also out there. Liza P, Pinocchio game starring Timothy Chalamet.
Timothy Chevrolet?
Chevrolet comes out. You might know him. He lives in Dune. Dune 2. That comes out in September. Then Lords of the Fallen. I mean, an Armored Core might be considered a Souls-like. Yeah, I don't know.
Maybe.
So yeah, it's a lot of stuff. I'm excited for it. But yeah, Corey, outside of that, not much else. What have you been playing? I'm just gonna scream it at you.
Yeah. So I for the past couple of weeks, with my deck, the summer of the deck continues. I've been playing a bunch of older games, but one I have played and fully finished is, it's fitting as we were just talking about it, Metroid Fusion.
Fusion.
For the Game Boy Advance, Metroid Fusion is Metroid 4 of the 2D side-scrolling Metroid games. Really?
Huh. Mm-hmm. I didn't know that.
It says Metroid 4 when I booted up. I've fully played through it. It's very short. I think my clear time was 4 hours and like 40 minutes. And so it is my first Metroid game. Not my first Metroidvania, but it is my first Metroid or Castlevania. Also, the Nintendo library is just a gargantuan black hole when it comes to my gaming history. And so, thank you all for coming on my journey as I re-educate myself on a lot of these things. But Metroid Fusion, where to begin? It starts with, picks up after Metroid 3, where this parasite has infected Samus's suit. Samus's suit, it has to be taken to the station to be cleaned, and you are without a lot of powers, kind of a thing. I can't remember exactly why you don't have your powers. But essentially, you find out, oh, the space station where it's on has now kind of like, it's gone radio silent. There's an explosion. Things like aren't right there. We need you, Samus, to go and figure out what's going on. And it turns out your suit that's been taken over by this parasite is now sentient, and it is trying to find a way off the ship. And so it's a little bit horror-esque as you take on a weakened Samus, and you are going through this space station, avoiding SAX is what it's called. That one, because it will one-shot you, and it hunts you in certain parts of the game. And so there are many parts of the game throughout where, like, you will enter into a level and, like, it goes quiet. You hear, like, the door open behind you, and you hear the dum, dum, dum as it's, like, entering your area, and you have to hide somewhere. And so it's genuinely, like, oh, like, you know, you clench up a little bit when, like, they have, no, not here. Where's a wall? There's not a wall. I had to bomb a hole in the floor. I had to do it quick before they can hear me, kind of a thing. And there's a lot of instances like that throughout the game, but we'll get into more of that later. But essentially throughout the game, Samus is working with a new AI. Her previous one, it sounds like, was Sacrifice himself in Metroid 3. Spoilers for Metroid 3. I don't know.
Which would be Super Metroid. Weird thing. So I've played a decent amount of Metroid games. Super Metroid, probably the most whenever I was a kid. Metroid Fusion, Metroid Zero Mission. I was not aware that Metroid Fusion was in the story chronology. Metroid Fusion is the second to most like recent.
Metroid Dread is its sequel because I want to play Metroid Dread next because it kind of ends on a cliffhanger.
Okay. It's been a while since I've played Fusion. So,
yeah. So, where is it? Yeah. So she has a new AI that's like helping her out, I think, as the last one dies at the end of Metroid 3. I don't know because I haven't played it and it's not really clear either. She kind of, Samus vaguely talks about it. But to get into the meat of the game, what I really liked, what really works for me, what really didn't, all around, I really, really dug this game. I want to play more Metroid games because of it. Okay. And what I've read is it's a bit different in most of the Metroid games because it's a lot more linear, as in you can't kind of explore everywhere and figure out how you want to go about things as you go. It's like level locked as you progress.
Yep.
But from what I've read, everyone's like, it's a good intro into Metroid to get you used to everything that goes on. But throughout the game, you slowly pick up more powers, and the game design is set around as you go through each level. The beginning part of each level is fully designed for you to be able to operate within the powers that you now have. And once you pick up new powers, getting back through the level is focused solely on usually using those new powers that you acquire. And I think it's incredibly well designed that way and challenges you throughout as like, okay, I know how to do basic combat. I know how to, you know, jump, turn into a ball, bomb, X, Y, Z. And it throughout the game, it pieces together all of your moves through different sequences and different levels and different boss fights. I think in a very elegant and very like structured manner. And I found that very rewarding as I played, as it teaches you how to play the game incredibly well and like cuts you loose to go and then play.
Yeah.
I found Samus very, there's not a ton of dialogue. It is an older game, but just as she's a very, she gives me big, I guess Ethan Hunt gives me big Samus vibes, but she gives me big Ethan Hunt from Mission Impossible vibes of like,
okay,
I hear management, I hear you talking, and I think it's a load of BS.
Yeah.
So F you, I'm gonna do it my own way. And I have so much respect for Samus for that. But yeah, it's big like Mission Impossible energy in my opinion, or I guess Mission Impossible is big Metroid energy as well.
Yeah.
I think it kind of works, honestly.
Okay.
Throughout, I found it very fun. It's very quick. Like I said, I finished roughly like 4.5 hours.
Yep.
I thought the boss fights were either hit or miss. I've seen a lot of people say, oh, the boss fights are the best part of Metroid Fusion. I think some of the boss fights are insanely good. There's one where you fight this robot and it's like well-designed pacing of like, okay, I'm on these rafters. I'm having to like manage when I'm up on the rafters, dodging over him, like shooting missiles down at the right time. It's like perfect timing. And also like I can learn his pattern really well. I thought that was so cool. Then there's another one where it's this spider that just picks you up and throws you down if it gets anywhere close to you. So you have to sit in the corner and then like wait for it to like give it its opportunity to go, and you go and shoot a bunch of missiles, and then he starts bouncing around everywhere. I'm like, this is just stupid. This isn't challenging the abilities that I know. This is me just having to find a way to cheese this fight, which is like, because I was struggling hard with it. So I went to Reddit, and everyone's like, yeah, you kind of just have to cheese it. Like, you just sit in the corner and then you shoot a ton of rockets. And then once this next phase happens, you just shoot all of your rockets and hope you hit. I'm like, that's just bad design.
Okay.
But there's multiple where I'm like, this is great design. The final fight with SAX, so good. So good. I learned her pattern by the end, or learned a pattern to where I could like take them down like very well.
Okay.
But altogether, I thought the game, I loved it. It was so good. My biggest chief complaint with Metroid Fusion, and a lot of people will say, what the heck, if they've played it, is at the end of each boss fight, you've expended so many resources. You're most of the time I was near death. There's a secondary boss fight after every boss fight where this parasite, or in the way you get your powers throughout the game, is it comes out in this little thing and it swings and it tries to hit you, and you have to like time, dodge, wait for this eye to open up on this floating thing, and it doesn't have like normal like swingy mechanics. It's like bouncing around everywhere, and you have to essentially shoot it with a rocket several times to kill it. And the amount of times I would beat a boss and then die to that because I was near the boss and it spawns immediately where the boss is and will like fly at you right away. It drove me insane at a certain point, especially with some of the harder boss fights towards the end. I'm like, please, I've beaten him. Just let me beat him. And this is to the point where I think the Steam Deck made this experience very enjoyable for me. I would save state it as soon as I got to the point where I'd beat a boss. I'm like, I'm save stating it. That way I've beaten the boss.
Yep.
And now I can just reload that save state and kill this thing.
Yep.
Which is a little bit cheesy, but that was kind of the only time I did it. Other than that, I kept the save rooms and all that, but it was just driving me crazy. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to take advantage of my modern technology. I'm going to save state this, and I'm just going to be happier for it. And I was happier for it, and I'm thankful that I did that.
Yeah. Got to use modern technology to your advantage.
Yeah. Thank you, Chris. But no, I really thought it was such a good intro, I think, for me, that I want to pick up Metroid Prime, the remake that came out. I know that's very different. I know that's the 3D Metroid, while Metroid Fusion is the 2D side-scrolling. I want to play more, though. I thought it's just basic mechanics, its story, and everything that was offered was so well done and so fun. And again, brought like good amounts of tension with the SAX jump scare / chase sequences, and along with the boss fights, level design, all that. I thought it was such a great package. Like, I want to see what else they do. I know a lot of people love Metroid Fusion, but I know like Super Metroid is widely beloved, the Metroid Primes as well. And yeah, I want to see more of that series, and I think it's so good, and I'm very glad I played it.
Love it. Yeah, I have a copy right here of, here it is, that I need to play at some point.
Ooh.
Samus Returns.
You need
3DS.
To play that,
yes. That is Metroid 2. For all of you uncultured
fellas.
I need to play. Also, need to play Metroid Dread, which I've played all of like 5 minutes of and have not played.
Yeah, I do want to play Metroid Dread because again, it is a sequel to this.
It is. And yeah. Who knew? I wasn't aware. Yeah. I also didn't know that Metroid Fusion was the follow up to. I guess maybe Other M, but Super Metroid.
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. So yeah, right around there. Who knew? Cool.
Yeah.
I love it.
Yeah. It's sick. I strongly advise you to play it and or replay it. And everyone who's like, oh, I want to get into Metroid. Get into Metroid. I waited too long to do it. And I'm so glad I did it.
And there's a reason people love it.
Yeah. I need to play Castlevania games now to understand what Castlevania brings to the Metroid
part of it.
Yeah. The Metroidvania idea of it. Everyone, I mean, Ario Sorrow is the one everyone points to, so I'll probably check that out.
Ario Sorrow, Symphony of the Night. Those are probably
Symphony
the two.
Symphony of the Night, yes.
Yeah, Portrait Symphony of the... Yes, I don't... So I missed a number of the hand... Because, like, between the GBA and the DS, there were, like, six, I think, across those... I played a couple. I didn't play all of them. Some of them I know, like, some people weren't super hot on. Let me look it up, I guess.
But you're right. Symphony of the Night is one everyone points at, not Aria of Sorrow. My bad.
Aria of Sorrow is also one that a lot of people, I think that's usually up there, like, in the top three. But, yeah, Symphony of the Night is the PS1 game where you play as Alucard.
Which is what the, show Castlevania is based on, which the show is so good.
Yeah.
The animation, especially in the final like two seasons. Oh my gosh. So good. I've based one of we were talking about ahead of time. I'm not going to get into spoilers because I know some of my players listen. I based one of my BBEG's Big Bad Evil Guys on the season 4 death of Castlevania because he just talks so much shit. And I love it. And that's his energy. So
love it. Yeah. It looks like, because I know the Switch has, not just Switch, Sony consoles, probably most places, has like a Castlevania Advance collection, which would have, I think, like Dawn of Sorrow. Mm-hmm. They would have, looking at this list, I guess, Aria of Sorrow as well. Those are supposed to be really good. Symphony of the Night, you can also probably buy on your PlayStation console for like $3.
You can.
It's super cheap. That was the PS1 game. Very good. I need to go back and replay it. I have it downloaded because I did, in fact, buy it a while back for like $3.
Should we play it?
Are we doing this?
Do a sneaky bonus on that?
That wouldn't be a bad idea. It's been a long time since I've played a Castlevania game. That's for sure.
I've never played one, so we should just do it.
Yeah. We need to talk about that. That would be if there's any Symphony of the Night is a wild ride, my friend. What else you been playing, Corey? What else you got going on?
Additionally, I picked up Diablo 4 this past week.
Without me.
You were just sitting on my hands, man. And one of my friends, he's also a listener. Hey, Wade. Shout out, Wade. Hey. He wanted to play a game. I'm like, hey, I want to play. We're between The Ascent, which is what he tossed out.
Okay.
And then Diablo 4. I'm like, I would like to play Diablo 4. And he was like, well, you want to play Diablo 4? Let's play Diablo 4. So we picked up Diablo 4. And really dig it. We came in at a weird time with Diablo 4. There's a lot of backlash on their most recent patch, which kind of nerfed a lot of characters, but we didn't know that because we hadn't played it, so we didn't know what the game was like before that. And so we went in. I've made a druid. I've named him Earthman. Made a rogue named Fred. And the adventures of Earthman and Fred through Sanctuary have been nothing if not entertaining. We've played probably like 2 hours now, 2 hours, maybe 2.5 hours into the story. And I will say, I full thoughts just as they come to me. Find the combat very engaging, especially with a friend. I think playing solo would be fun. I don't think it'd be as entertaining as it is playing with a friend because, one, I mean, we're talking, cracking jokes, having fun, but the synergy you can make with a character. And so I'm playing a druid. I'm tanking a lot of the hits. I turn into a werebear. I love being a werebear. Or a werewolf. Being a werewolf is so freaking cool. And I will be in the thick.
Can you turn into an owl bear?
No, we'll get to that later. Don't jump the gun. Stay in your place. But I get into the thick of it and I'm just tanking tons of hits. And he's from the side and he is making enemies vulnerable to me. He's like firing off quick shots. He's staying out of the meat of the fight, but he's making my job easier by weakening the enemies. And it creates such a fun loop as we like go from essentially fight to fight to fight. As you work your way through an area, it is like relentless fighting, but it is such like a fun way to do it of, okay, I'm going to get into the thick of this. I'm going to be a werewolf. I'm going to be a werebear, or I'm going to use my lightning and be Thor with my axe. And he's just off on the side doing his rogue thing, doing lots of damage, making it easier for me to do damage. And it's just a fun little dichotomy we get to have. The story, love Lilith. She's hot. I'm into it. She's also super evil, so she's got to go, I think. She asked me to join. Hey, I'm in. But I doubt that'll happen. You never know. But Lilith, interesting. She kind of doesn't, from how the game describes, like she doesn't have a big stake in the whole like good versus evil. She's just kind of like, just let me do my baddie stuff.
Yeah.
Which isn't going to fly, But we've worked our way through. We're not super far into the story, but like we're in the open world area. There's, you can see other players running around, stuff like that. It has that big MMO vibe, similar to, I guess, most modern MMOs or previous ones. I haven't played tons of them where it's just like, oh, you'll stumble across like a weekly event and you need to clear out this area and you'll get loot. And again, it's a good loop of clear out this area, get nice loot, change out your stuff, upgrade. The upgrade tree seems fairly straightforward, if not very lengthy. It definitely feels like it's intended, like you kind of need to specialize, because I know with the level cap being, I think, 50 in World Tier 1 or something like that. It's like you really need to focus in on like a certain build, because all the paths branch off a good bit. Like hone in, decide how you want to play, and then go for another round, because I think this main story is like 20 hours if you're going story mode, but all the extra content, it goes on for a long time. So tentative thoughts. I like it. I can see where it falls short in some areas. I think the tutorial needs a bit of work. It doesn't really teach you how to play that well. I think the story could be a little bit more engaging. But again, everything I understand about Diablo, this is my first Diablo game as well. Mm-hmm. Everything I understand about Diablo is not really about the story. It's about the grind, the dungeon grind of in the loop of kill stuff, new loot, level up, set new loop, repeat, rinse and repeat. It's very satisfying. It is a very satisfying loop. It's very fun to play with people. I really like it. I've found myself like itching to play more. I don't know if I would love it for a like long stretch. I don't know if it's something I'd want to play for like 3-4 hours a night kind of a thing.
Yeah. But
we've done two separate like hour and a half sessions. And that's like a great, great window that we've played in, where it's like you get in, you do like 3-4 of these like loop cycles, and then it's like, okay, well, I'm kind of tired. Like, well, let's call it and we'll pick up it here in a couple of days. And yeah, Diablo 4, it deserved the hype it got. It also, I think, deserves a little bit of the flack that it got. It made it difficult as well, playing together. We both had to play through the prologue. Nothing wrong with that, I guess, but like he could not join my game unless he played through the prologue.
Gotcha.
Which again, I don't think there's anything wrong with, but when we first played, we played all the way through way past it. Because we both started the prologue, and then when we went to play the other night, I was like, oh, he can't join your game because he hasn't done it on his world or in his playthrough. So we had to go through. We essentially played through that, what we did twice now at this point, equally as fun both times. I'm just like, well, that's just stupid. Like, why doesn't, like, he played all the way there. Why can't the game just recognize that he's played the prologue just in my world kind of a thing? Thought that was a little dumb. I can see how maybe the classes have been nerfed, because I don't feel like I do a ton of damage as a druid. I'm like, oh, I am here to tank hits. Like, I don't feel like I do a lot of damage. And everything I've read before was like, no, every class like felt very powerful and it felt good to play them. And it feels good to like be a werebear and be a werewolf. But I fully understand, oh, my job is tanking these hits, like getting like essentially like getting the aggro. That way he can deal like the high damage. When before it was, oh, I can bring in the aggro, but still like deal out the pain that I want.
Yeah.
Which kind of sucks, but also I don't know otherwise. It is riddled with microtransactions, which you don't have to do in any of it to play. I just hate how in your face they are when you pull up the game. It's like, here's this new skin. Here's this new armor. You know, you want to get it? You want to get it? Please.
Yeah.
Please. Yeah. I'm just like, just let me play your game. You have a pretty good game. Just let me play.
Yeah. I have not played Diablo 4 yet. I would like to. I would like to jump in at some point, Corey. I did get me a headset. You'll be happy.
Yes, you did.
Yeah.
It's about time. So
that way I can actually talk to you.
Y'all don't understand people. Well, no, we always talk, but we have to phone call. And then
we have to use like Discord or something because like I only have like AirPods or something, which I can't connect to my, but now I have something that's functional.
Get Diablo 4 and come run through Sanctuary with us.
Yeah. Well, it will benefit you. So like, and that's always been the tough thing with like Diablo. I feel like my reference point is Diablo 3, but like Diablo 3 had a rocky launch and then it took a while for them to iron it out to a place where people felt really happy with it. And it seems like that's kind of the similar thing. Like, you know, they apparently announced today that they're going to be coming out with a patch in the next week or two that's supposed to reverse some of the decisions that they made. Sick. And they're like, where it's like, okay, yeah, we nerfed barbarians and sorcerers. I'm not gonna make that better. Cost of respecking, it's going to be less. just stuff like that. Yeah. Like, I don't know what all of the concerns have been. It doesn't sound like it's going to fix everything, but it sounds like, you know, it's one of those things. They make it because like Diablo 3, they were notorious for having the auction house, the real money auction house right at launch, which really like kind of soured the experience. Like the microtransactions may kind of peter out over time. Who knows? But it's one of those things where that's kind of part of the experience is going through and just kind of like being there as the game's shaken up, which I mean, is also kind of like, I mean, Diablo's not an MMO, but it's kind of how like MMOs would feel, where I would play World of Warcraft and I would be really invested. Yeah. And you would, it's that live service thing where they are patching things in, where it'd be like some big patch would come and it'd be all of a sudden like this like whole strategy that I would have of playing the game. It was like, yeah, all of a sudden we're not like, for me, I mean, people who play World of Warcraft, you'll know what I'm talking about. For me, I mained a warrior for years and years. It was my bread and butter. He was a dwarf. His name was Hammerthor. And
that's awesome.
He,
I love that.
Hammerthor? The funny thing, if you're listening out there, hi, how are you doing? We had a paladin on our server who I regular, paladin. we later on, my guild and his guild actually merged and we were raiding together. His name was Thor's Hammer. And so Thor's Hammer. Yeah. I was regularly like a tank. That was my main thing. Like going through raids, I was one of the main tanking. And like it constantly was changing because it would be like, okay, we're using the strategy because this is how we're generating the most aggro. Here's how we're doing this. And then like a patch would come out of nowhere and it's like, yeah, it generates 20% less aggro. It's like, well, now this is useless. And so now that you're having to come up with all these new and then like there'd be times where it was like, you couldn't do any damage. You couldn't do any aggro. And it's like, there's just this 6-month period where you feel useless as a character because they just decided on a whim that you were something, I guess. And like, it kind of has the feeling of that where it's like, just at a whim, they're just like, yeah, you know, maybe you're stronger now. Why? I don't know. Just we decided, or maybe you're not as strong. Yeah. Congrats. Too bad for you. Sucks. Hope that you didn't like playing that class. So yeah, I mean, it's kind of for people who have been in MMOs, like you know, the struggles, you know, kind of you're familiar with that. And it's one of those things. And it's also a Blizzard thing, you know, I mean, play Overwatch,
really sucks.
watch like, you know, you get really good with Hanzo's scatter arrows and all of a sudden they're like, you know what? Not doing that anymore. Now you just rapid fire arrows. And it's like, well, that sucks. I don't want that.
Scatter arrows gone. So.
Yeah. So I don't know. I'm glad you're enjoying. I will hop in as soon as I am physically able, Corey. I promise you this. In my heart.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm excited too.
We would love you to come in and play whatever class you want to play. Necromancer.
I was about to say, if you say sorcerer, I will kick you right in the bum hole.
No, we need someone doing damage out in range.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
The werebear, he can take all the hits.
It's a barbarian it is.
Hey, be
throwing
barbarian.
Axes.
I can respect my class and be more of a ranged druid. It's a thing.
Yeah, you could. You could be a boomkin. I know what you got.
It'd be nice. It'd be fun. Yeah. But I that's what I've been playing. I want to hear what you've been playing, and then I have something fun for us to do.
Surprise, yeah. yeah, so I finished Oxenfree 2 last week. Not really much else to say about it, because I was very much at the end of the game whenever I talked about it last week. So not a whole lot there. It ends strongly. Again, I will reiterate, like, if you haven't played Oxenfree 1, it's worth playing Oxenfree 1. Like, if you go into Oxenfree 2, it's not required, but there is enough in Oxenfree 2 to, like, justify. You know, the story's standalone, but there's enough going on that ties into Oxenfree 1 that it's worth doing. But again, it's such a, like, I think it had, like, a really strong narrative that really, like, kind of tuned in with me as a 30-year-old man.
Yeah.
Is somebody who's just going through it. Like, you know, they're like, she, what was her name? Riley. She's going through it. She's having stuff. She's dealing with things. Like, you know, and it just kind of, it resonated with me. And I was very happy with just kind of the overall direction. It seemed, the ending didn't seem like as powerful or even necessarily as like difficult of a choice to make, because there's like a big choice to be made at the end of the game, both in Oxenfree 1 and 2. Didn't feel necessarily like, I don't think the first one was difficult, but the second one almost just kind of felt like there was an obvious answer, and if you didn't choose it, you were like, what were you doing? Like, were you not playing the game, kind of? Like, so that was a little bit, you know, less of a thing, but still, like, narratively, just really strong, loved it, really cool. The game that I have been playing since I started and finished a playthrough, my third, maybe my fourth playthrough of Alan Wake.
Yeah.
On the Wake. This time on the remastered edition on PlayStation. Alan Wake, notoriously for years and years and years, was an Xbox 360 only game where I played it first. But now with Alan Wake 2 coming out in October, figured it was a good time. It's shortish. I think I beat the main story in about like 10 hours.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, I'm wrapping up the DLC. It has two pieces of DLC that take place after the main story that do kind of, because the end of the game. Okay, so Alan Wake, for anybody who's you've heard us toss around these couple of words, not knowing what they mean. Alan Wake is a game that came out like in 2010, 360 third person shooter. You play as Alan Wake, who is effectively a like Stephen King analog, like but like a young hot celebrity Stephen King. Like, he writes some of the best books. People are just like, they get like, this is the hot stuff. People want to read it. And he's kind of like full of himself, or at least like pre the game, he's kind of full of himself about it. Whenever the game, begins, he's heading off to a place called Bright Falls, up in like Oregon, Washington, for a like vacation with his wife, just to kind of get away, to kind of like get the juices flowing again. He hasn't written in 2 years, and he needs to kind of get his head back together. And while they're there, like, it's very what you would think of like a small town Pacific Northwest, like a lot of cabins. They're about to have this Deer Fest festival, and there's like the local radio guy, and, you know, it's just all these things. But like, while they're there, they stay in this cabin, this like kind of spooky nondescript cabin that like people don't really seem super aware of. And they stay there, and then they're that night whenever they arrive, Alan's wife gets like dragged under the water by some darkness. He dives in and then wakes up a week later, dangling off a cliff in his car, and he doesn't know what happened. And he starts finding all of these pieces to a novel that he wrote, but he has not remembered writing, that is effectively telling the story of what is happening right now. And so you're playing through this game trying to, for one, like, find his wife, find out what's going on, figure out what happened in the last week, and also fight off what is now like this onslaught of just shadow possessed people, like people of the small town who are now like cloaked in shadow coming at you with axes and knives and sickles and whatever. And which leads to like probably what is maybe the coolest and most unique thing about Alan Wake. Like it has, so I mean, it is a horror game. It's much less scary than I remember it being. Like I remember playing through it the first time and being like, I have to listen to a podcast or something. Like I cannot be immersed in this. This is scaring me to death.
Yeah.
And now I guess like post Resident Evil 7, like it just, it feels so tame in comparison. That's good. But it's really not scary. Like, you know, there, I think some of the sound design like can be a little, because like a number of the, like the shadow guys, they'll kind of be like trailing around at different points, especially some of the more notable ones, like characters who, you know, who have become possessed. Like they'll be walking, they'll be in the woods and you'll hear them like talking to themselves, but they're talking nonsense. They're like, you know, you're supposed to change your oil after every 10,000 miles. Like, you know, just saying weird stuff. And they're like, so it can be a little bit creepy here and there, but like the biggest thing is they're wandering around with this like shadow covering them, and you have to do any damage to them, because it's like a third person shooter. Any damage, you have to like remove the shadow by shining light on them. So Alan carries around like a flashlight with him. You can shine the flashlight on them and focus it in. That will gradually move it down. But you know, that saps your battery. So you have to like use batteries and stuff. You're never at like a loss for batteries. I was constantly like capped out and stuff, but it drains batteries. But you can also do stuff like, you know, flashbangs effectively, like, and I think that's the cool thing is like stuff in other games that would effectively act as like some distraction are like the WMDs of this game, where like a flashbang is basically like a grenade. You throw a flashbang, and since it's a bright flash of light, it just disintegrates enemies. A flare gun is effectively like a rocket launcher. You shoot it at somebody, and it's just this massive explosion of light that just vaporizes everybody. And it's just this, like, it's a really cool concept because it is like, especially later on, whenever you have like six enemies coming at you and they're all like, they're trying to wrap around you and stuff. You're trying to do all of these things to like, I can't just shotgun spray all these guys. Like I have to bring their light down. So I need to like pop a flare and lay it by me so that they'll stay back. And then I need to like focus here before my flare dies so that I can like, you know, so I can stay safe for a second. Like it's not without like, it's like, it feels like a 360 era shooter. It's a little janky. It's not like super tuned in. And also like the light mechanic does kind of get old after a little while. Like it's pretty novel early on, but especially after a while, it's like, man, this is taking a while. Like, I gotta shine my, like, I'm just shining my flashlight at this dude for like 10 seconds and he will, like, and it's the same thing every encounter. It's one of these guys and I have to shine my, like, he's not any threat to me. He's so far off, but I just have to shine my light at him for, like, I can't kill him right away. I just have to shine my light at him for, to, like, it does kind of lose some of that over time, but it is such a, like, it's such an inventive, like, world and space because, like, Alan is constantly narrating everything like he is a character in a story. Mm. And so, like, it very much read, like, all of his internal monologue reads like a Stephen King novel. And it's all very, like, you know, I went over here and I answered the phone. I didn't know who was going to be on the other line, but I did it anyway. My palms were moist. Mm. I was nervous. Like, it's that kind of stuff where it, like, especially for someone like me, who, like, I am a writer.
Yep.
I, you know, there was a reason, like, whenever I played it initially, there was a reason that it really drew me in. Like, that, it has this very unique thing where even though, like, we've seen it, we've seen the whole, like, an author, they write this thing and then it comes to life. Like, we've seen that story, but there's, like, there's just an energy to it that I feel like we don't see a lot in video games where it is a little bit, it is kind of meditative. It is kind of like, you know, it's concrete enough to where it feels very like Americana and very like homey, but it also feels like very otherworldly and eldritch in a way that like some, cause I mean, you think about like Stephen King with like It, for instance, like it's, you know, it's like, it's normal. Like there are normal human things, but then there's this unexplainable entity who's like wrecking havoc. And it's that same kind of thing. Like some things make sense, some things don't, but you're just kind of there. Like that's just kind of how it's supposed to be. And coming back around to what I think was the original point that I was trying to make, I am doing the DLC now. The game ends on a very, like, you know, it's not really a cliffhanger. It's just, it's very ambiguous. It doesn't really, it's not a very concrete ending. And so like the DLC is supposed to kind of wrap that up. And also too, somewhat kind of, well, and so that's the funny thing. I know I'm scattered. I'm going all over the place.
You're good.
There are the two Alan Wake DLCs. There is also, if anybody remembers Control, which came out in 2019,
so
beautiful
good.
Game by the same developers. They have an Alan Wake DLC in Control. Yeah. That's called like AWE, I think is what it, and it is supposed to effectively like bridge Alan Wake and Alan Wake 2. Like it's supposed to be essentially the connecting tissue between the two games. So it's kind of like, there's a part of me while I'm playing this stuff that's like, man, am I gonna go back and play Control's Alan Wake DLC to see what happens next, to see where this goes, so to see how this leads into Alan Wake 2. I might do it. I don't know.
I think someone pointed out in a trailer that the gun that Jesse has in Control shows up in the Alan Wake 2 trailer, which I was like, whoa, okay. That is a interesting thing to add, considering that specific weapons capabilities and the ideas that Control is. Control is actually an incredibly good game. Very fun telekinetic powers where you're pushing, pulling, levitating in the air, throwing stuff around. It's sick. Highly recommend it if you haven't played it. It's pretty short too. But all that's to say, to come back around to your initial point with the combat of Alan Wake being the lights and like them working on that system of different lightness, different things, and how like light reacts into the environment, affects enemies. I think that's really neat. It sucks that it kind of gets old, but I think I think it's really cool to see games circumvent the general approach of gun, shoot, shoot, pew, pew, or knife, stab, stab, shing, shing, and take the concept of light and turn that in itself into a weapon and how we use everyday light. Like you said, a flare creates light around you. Flashlight is like a singular, like rifle shot, so on and so forth. Yep. I think it's so cool that games do that.
Yeah.
And I hope Alan Wake 2 does something similar, but keeps it fresh.
Yeah. And that's the, it's hard to tell exactly what is going to happen in Alan Wake 2, just given the fact that, you know, for one, where Alan Wake ends and the combination that Alan Wake 2 is supposed to feature both Alan and an FBI agent as like dual protagonists. So there's going to be kind of like you're going back and forth. And then the combination that's because, I mean, for people who are somewhat unaware, like spoiler, non-spoiler, but like Control effectively like loops it in to be like pretty much every weird thing that happens is in the Control universe. Like it's kind of, they kind of take on that approach. And so like, you know, yeah, in Control, Alan Wake is a shared universe thing. And so like, if they are taking that as a stepping stone to say, well, Alan Wake going forward, we're not just like hinting at a connected universe. We are an actual connected universe.
Yeah.
To see if it takes any like cues, if it does start to pull in, like if there is stuff from Control that starts like seeping over, if there is other, like that could be really cool. I was already excited for Alan Wake 2. I'm more excited for Alan Wake 2. Playing Alan Wake 1, like it still is one of these games, like, you know, again, feels kind of old, but there's something really special about it. It's a good game.
Yeah.
It's a good game and I like it.
Good. Good. I'm glad you're enjoying that. You love a good comfort game.
Yeah. Not the most comforting, but you know, it's a thing. Outside of that, Corey, been playing Marvel Snap.
Yeah.
That's what I've been doing.
Nice.
Yeah, I don't know. I got back into it a few weeks ago, actually, but it's just, I don't know. It's a good little quick card game. You know, I can just kind of play a quick match in like 2 or 3 minutes and
see, and
be done.
That's what Vampire Survivors was, but I've now gotten to the point where all my runs last 30 minutes. Like the Reaper comes for me at the end for almost every run now. And I'm just like, I can't just like do a quick run. It's a whole ordeal now. Still very good though.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it.
All right. I have one thing before we get out of here. It might be a bit extended, but I need your help, Chris. So for those who don't know, it is Baldur's Gate 3 week. It releases this Thursday. I'm so excited. My hype levels are insanely through the roof. I feel like a kid. That being said, I picked up early access. I've played, and I checked earlier, 25 hours of early access on 2 different characters. So really like 12. I think it's probably more like 16 and like 9. Between the two, and haven't seen hardly any. I've seen a lot of Act One, probably like half compared to what I've seen, like just scrolling through Reddit and stuff like that. And I know they're adding, like they're saying they've changed up a lot of Act One. They're adding like 33% more context already, or content already onto Act One. This isn't the issue. The issue is when I play a game like this, my first full playthrough is my canon playthrough. This is like, this is what happens. And so with that, I need to create my party, Chris. And so I have a couple of them picked out already. I need your help deciding who my last one is going to be. And go ahead, pull up the party list because I need input here because I am stuck in like decision paralysis right
now. So there are a set group of companions you can play with? Is that what I'm hearing?
In Baldur's Gate 3, there are origin characters slash very like detailed NPCs. And so there are seven, really six origin characters. The seventh one's the Dark Urge. It is considered like, if you're going for an evil playthrough, they're like, play the Dark Urge because he's a baddie. So there are six origin characters that you can play as. You can start as your main character and play through their main story. Or you can create your own, which is what I'll be doing. And so I'm going to make my own character. I'm leaning Paladin. I love Paladins in Dungeons & Dragons. I'm a big Pally guy. And so my initial party right now is, I'll go through, I have two picked. I need help with my last. Our Shadowheart. She is a trickery domain cleric, which means she is a, she likes subterfuge, cunningness, stealth, all around sneakiness. She is a worshiper of Shar, which within the D&D universe is she is kind of like the evil goddess of night. There's two goddesses of like night and the moon. She's the bad one. Playing through early access, I won't get into too much spoilery of it, but she seems more of a heart of gold kind of a girl. Or lass, or woman, however, whatever you want to call her. She's pretty cool. So she's going to be a cleric, though, which clerics in D&D 5e are kind of healers. Healing in D&D 5e is not great, but she's a good utility buff caster that can do good damage, but also healing. I'm picking up Karlach as well. She is a tiefling, which means she is kind of like hellspawn. And the, like a bad word for it, but like she has like hell heritage of the nine hells. She's a barbarian. She is a survivor of the blood wars and is going to be my tank as a barbarian. She seems just like big F it we ball energy, which is my favorite type of energy in D&D. And so I have my barbarian, who's my tank, me, probably a paladin, maybe sorcerer, probably paladin, who is a high damage dealer, decent tank, but can offer kind of being the face of the party as well, kind of interactions. We have Shadowheart, who is our healer slash kind of utility. So that brings us, who do I pick for my last one? Origin characters, Chris. We have Lazelle, who is a Gith Yankee, seems to be very integral to the story, as the Gith Yankee and Mind Flayers within D&D canon are like Haddifield to McCoys, are very, very much like, we hate each other. I will eat you and like poop out your corpse and feed it to your children, kind of like energy.
Okay.
Like they hate each other. So feels it'd be nice to have that in there because the Mind Flayers are the central some of the central antagonists in the game. But also, she's a fighter. I can't have three fighters. I can't have three frontline people. That makes no sense in the party composition-wise. Who's going to be doing my high damage spells from a distance? No one. That's who. So, in my mind, she's kind of out, but I'm willing to hear your opinion on this. For story reasons, she makes a lot of sense. Will next, Will Blade of Frontiers. He's a warlock, so offers utility, offers high damage from range, can fight up close. His big appeal to me is that he's a warlock whose patron, or who he gets his powers from, is a devil who wants to kill Karlach, judging by what they have released in story-wise. Karlach, my barbarian. So, you know, we're putting it here. And so, story-wise, I'm like, this could be interesting. Would I have to kill Will? Can I convince Will to like be friends with Karlach? Can like them be buddy-buddy? So we hunt down his patron devil to take her down. You know, there's a lot there. He also offers a lot within my party. Feels pretty solid.
Yeah.
And there's Gale, the try-hard wizard, constantly schmoozing. Bit of a kiss ass, but I kind of liked him as well because I had him join my most recent early access just walk. As much as like he was a schmoozer, you know, I was kind of like, I kind of like it. You know, I like being hyped up. I know you're blowing smoke, but it's nice. So I'm going to just choose to ignore, the smoke part of this. Yeah. couple of caveats with him. He's a wizard, which is roughly the best class in D&D, along with cleric, in my opinion.
Yeah.
He can do anything I want him to do. Damage, buff, debuffs, crowd control, you name it. He's great in that. The only issue is, again, this isn't spoilers. This is what they have announced and what you would be able to read on their character, is he kind of has a magic bomb in his body that you have to feed him magic items so it doesn't go off. So I'm like, you're kind of a walking like atomic bomb, which is just kind of annoying because you're going to eat my magic items, which magic items are dope in 5e, but there's also not a lot of them. So it's like, you're kind of just like a lot, but also incredibly useful. So, okay. And so that's it in the main act one. I know in act two, you can pick up Minx or Jahira, both returning characters from Baldur's Gate 1 and 2. Mink, I believe I'm pronouncing that right, is voiced by Matthew Mercer. So huge win in that column. He's a ranger, and rangers kind of can be frontline fighters, but predominantly imagined as bowmen. Help a lot with survival, good utility, good perception so you don't get like surprised a ton. So it's good to have, but also you have to kind of wait to pick him up. You have to roll with a 3-man party. I could roll with a 4-man party and kick someone, but I don't know how that works exactly. Then there's Jahira, who is the leader of a faction that you can join, not join, help out, destroy, whatever you want to do, who is a druid slash fighter, and she can join your party as well. There's also one more. We'll get to him in a second. In Act 1, I forgot about him. But she, druids, very good casters. Circle of Moon Druids is probably the best class in D&D 5e. Okay. I don't know if she is a Circle of the Moon, but she's a druid and a fighter. Is a leader of an organization, I think is a folk hero within like this setting. So I'm like, sounds pretty neat to have. Nice to have a living legend in your party. Then the other guy is Halson, who is also in Act 1. I completely forgot about him. There's one other person in Act 1, but she's full evil, and I'm not going evil playthrough, so we're disregarding Minthara.
Which one is that?
Her name's Minthara. She's a baddie.
Minthara.
You know, evil playthrough. We'll go with Minthara then. But there's Halson, who is a druid of a grove that you can help out there. If anyone watched the videos or the trailers, he is the bear that does. There's also another guy who's also kind of an evil playthrough. He's a vampire that can join your party, Asterion. Not picking him up for this one, so I'm kind of avoiding him. We're going with people who I would pick. And so Halson is a maybe. He's a beefcake, which is cool. But also a druid. So I'm like, okay, I could go with him. But he's very much goody two shoes. So I feel like if I took a step in the wrong direction, he would get on to me too much. Shadowheart can kind of go either way. Karlach scene, like I said, Ethet, we ball energy, but pretty good. So all that's to say, who do I pick, Chris? That was a long winded way of going about it. Or who would you eliminate?
So you're making a paladin. You
most likely.
Are
I might go sorcerer,
most likely,
but probably like 80% paladin.
Okay, most likely you're pulling a paladin. You have a character who can function as a healer or as a primary healer.
Yes,
And then Shadowheart. A character who is a
tank
primarily.
Yes,
full on tank. So to me, I mean paladins. I mean I know paladins can deal damage, but it sounds to me like.
They can also be like an off healer too.
Right. It sounds to me like you function well at having a paladin be a flex character who can heal a little bit, deal some damage, maybe even take some hits here and there, which tells me it's probably not a bad idea to have like a high damage dealing class.
Mm-hmm.
So something like, I know you mentioned your Githyanki fighter, having somebody like a fighter who can who can deal some good damage. If you want somebody who will maybe, you know, you mentioned at least looking through this list, Minsk the Ranger could be a good call, because that would be a damage dealer who can hang back.
Yes.
Instead of having two characters having, well, potentially three if you're kind of getting up into the fray. Mm-hmm. So having another one who can kind of hang back, maybe even, I don't know. I mean, I know you said you don't want to go with Asterion, but it seems like, rogues can be, depending on the game, rogues can be like, they can be kind of ranged too sometimes.
Yep. He'd be ranged, can do sneak attack, which is high damage from a distance.
Yeah. I'm trying to think what I ended up going with, because just looking through this, it makes it seem like it's a lot more Divinity Original Sin 2 than I realized.
It is, from what I can tell in early access, it is almost 5 D&D 5e, like beat for beat. They've changed up some levels of the spells. I think they've personally made it like where melee attackers are far more useful or far more adept. They can do more things on their turns. Usually it's just, I'm going to hit. Okay. Well, I'm going to do damage. But now, well, they can do a hamstring like attack where they don't do quite as much damage, but they slow down the other character, or a piercing shot, or they can cleave and do a bit more damage at expense to themselves, which is similar to a reckless attack. So they've added a bit more for melee, which I think is cool. But all in all, it is almost 5e beat for beat on the paper.
Yeah. I'm trying to think. I was trying to go through and remember what I did in Divinity Original Sin 2. And I think I went light on having a dedicated healer. Because I think a number of my characters had a lot of like self-healing. So like my guy was the
Ranger
Red
would
Prince.
Be able to heal. And so it addressed.
Yeah. Like my character was the Red Prince, who was a dragon like knight, effectively. Yep. Like a knight who was a dragon and could breathe fire. And he could get healed by like being in fire. And also used Fane, who was an undead, who could get healed in like things that would otherwise kill people and stuff. And so like I ended up, I think, going light on some of the healing. But I mean, that's what I would say personally, is like I would go with somebody who potentially like is a primarily a heavy damage dealer with maybe some utility skills to be able to kind of like throw in a heal every now and then. Like if you just need to top somebody off and just kind of like, you know, throw that little thing here, then that'd be great. A druid could function well as that.
Yeah. I would imagine. Jahira and Halson can do that. Gale, high damage with wizards.
That would be where my head is looking at what you're going for.
Okay, if you had to pick, Chris, this does weigh a lot in my decision.
My opinion.
Who would you pick? Yes, who would you pick?
Out of what you're looking at, I think I would probably go, not knowing much about them, it looks like I would probably go...
Oh, this is very shallow, very surface.
Yeah, I would probably go with Halson the Druid at number one.
Okay.
Minx the Ranger at number two.
Okay. Okay.
And then maybe Githyanki at number
Lizelle?
Three.
Okay.
Yeah. And then the Wizard. No, Gale. maybe Will the Warlock at four, and then Gale at number five.
Mm-hmm. Will's biggest appeal is the conflict and story element with Carlock, in my opinion. Yeah. Outside that, Warlocks, they're a weird class because they're primarily just going to Eldritch Blast day and night, because it's once you get Agonizing Blast or even Repelling Blast in this game, judging by its shove mechanic, if you haven't been shoving in Baldur's Gate 3, you're doing things wrong, because you can get shoved off a cliff. And I've had characters shoved off a cliff where I've gotten TPK'd and had to reload a save. And, like, it's an instant die. Like,
Okay.
Boom. They're dead. I'm just like, and it works both ways. You can shove off like the main like villain in your fight, like the one who has like 70 hit points. Like, I'm going to shove you off a cliff. They are dead. You don't get their loot, but they are gone. It is very much just a boop. And I'm like, that's dangerous. And so with a repelling blast, it's fine. But like, that's all he's really going to be doing. He's just going to be doing not high damage, just consistent damage from a distance. So he's really a story guy, which, you know, I'm not against. Halston. Okay. I can roll with Halston.
Yeah.
I need to see, because it feels like you can have people stay in your camp. And so without getting into details, you have like a camp each night to rest and get everything back. I'm like, I wonder if I can have people stay in my camp, can I like rotate them out? I think that would be, they haven't given any indication that you can. I should have tried it in early access, but by all accounts, it seems like, oh, you can ask them to wait for you in camp. And it's like, okay. And then you can tell another party member, hey, wait for me in camp. And then I wonder if I could go to a new person, like, okay, now come with me. Might try that out in early access, like tomorrow, if I get the chance, just to see. We'll see. Yeah.
Love it.
Going full good playthrough. So Halston definitely fits in that.
Okay.
I think Minx also fits in that. Lizelle, she's kind of chaotic neutral. I know Shadowheart and her have beef, at least in early access. They do not like each other. But again, it's just good story, good flavor.
Yeah.
We'll see. But Halston, okay.
Sweet. Yeah. Love it. Yeah. I like a good druid. I can dig it. Corey. We ran a little long, but I don't mind it. I enjoy it. Yeah, but Corey, where can people find you? Tell everyone where they can find you on X this week if they want to find you on X. Well,
it's still Twitter for me because I haven't updated my app, and nor will I until I'm forced to. And then I have made the decision to just only use our Arcade Cozy account. Once that happens, but. Well, it's Twitter for me still. You can follow me at Stay Thrashy. But far more importantly, follow us at @arcade_cozy on Twitter. Haven't posted as much recently because I haven't been able to figure out how to get my photos off my Steam Deck.
Interesting.
I'm sure I can take a photo and then find that in like the file manager on the desktop and then add that to like a Dropbox or my Google Docs and then have it that way. That feels like a really long way around it. So I'm trying to see if there's an easier way to do that. But I've just been playing my Steam Deck so much that I've been able to take as many photos. So I haven't posted as much recently on our Twitter, but I've been fairly active. But once it drops on PS5, which they have cross save, which is sick.
Very nice.
I'll be able to play on Steam Deck or on PS5, either of my saves. So sick. Shout out to Larian. I know what they're doing. Sweet. But yeah. Where can they follow you, Chris?
You can find us, arcadecozy@gmail.com. Everywhere else, don't worry about it.
Yeah.
Not really doing anything.
Enjoy your break. It's deserved.
Email us. Go on Instagram, watch, maybe I'll share.
Leave a like, leave a review, on wherever you listen to your podcast.
Yeah, happily, please do. What else? Johnny B. Good, 89, Interactive Music by him. Go follow him on Instagram. He might be on X, who knows, or, Threads. Or Mastodon. I don't know.
Comes out before our pod and you want me to pick a different character, just let us know. Send an email.
Yeah, absolutely. Talk to him. Tell him what's up. Corey, next week, will you have some Baldur's Gate 3?
I'll probably be giving my full thoughts on Baldur's Gate or my early impressions of Baldur's Gate 3 next week. Probably what you're going to get out of me. I might check out another Metroid. Probably won't, though.
Love it.
I'm almost done with Tears of the Kingdom, though. I went and did a whole, I won't get too much into it. I might get more into it next week because we're wrapping up here, people. I'll talk to you about it off the show because I don't want to spoil it. But there was a whole extra thing that I did not expect. That I was like, whoa, this is sick.
Okay.
But I'll get into that later. It was really cool. But love I basically it. Got the clear from the game of go fight Ganondorf.
Gotcha.
It was very much a like, hey, this is what you got to do now. So, yeah. Which yeah. I found him before. So I know where I looked at him.
You know where you're going.
Yeah, it was an oopsie. I was like, oh, no.
Yeah. Sweet. Corey, I don't know what I'll be bringing next week, but it'll be the fire, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
But yeah, until then, everybody, this has been Arcade Cozy. Life is hectic. Why should your hobbies be too? Oh,
whoa.
Yeah.
My bad.
Get it.